ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 41st chapter, Krishna and Balaram enter Mathura. The text today is, texts today are 51 and 52. I'll read the 51 and then we can chant 52 together. Sopi vavre chalam bhaktim tasmin eva kilatmani tad bhakteshu chasaur hardham bhuteshu Chadayam param. Saha. Please repeat. He. Api. And. Vavre. Chose. Achalam. Unshakable. Bhaktim. Achalam Bhaktim. What's Achalam Bhaktim?
Unshakable.
What is it?
Unshakable devotion.
Yeah. Tasmin. To him. Eva. Alone. Akila. Of everything. Atmani. The Supreme Soul. Tat. Toward his. Bhakteshu, his devotees. Cha, and Sahardam, friendship. Uteshu, toward living beings in general. Cha, and Dayam, mercy. Param, transcendental. Translation, Sudama chose unshakable devotion for Krishna, the supreme soul of all existence, friendship with his devotees, and transcendental compassion for all living beings. Who's Sudama? Huh? Actually here, this is, Krishna and Balaram have entered Mathura. Actually, he's the garland maker. He makes garlands. And he offered Krishna a beautiful garland. So, just backing up a little bit, so you have the context. This goes back to text number 43. I'll read the English up to where we are now. The two lords then went to the house of the garland maker Sudama. When Sudama saw them, he at once stood up and then bowed down, placing his head on the ground. He stood up because, as you read in the Nectar Devotion, when an important personality arrives somewhere, you should stand up. Then you can bow down. First stand up. 44. After offering them seats and bathing their feet, Sudama worshipped them and their companions with argya, garlands, pan, sandalwood paste, and other presentations. Sudama said, O Lord, my birth is now sanctified and my family free of contamination. Now that you both have come here, my forefathers, the demigods, and the great sages are certainly all satisfied with me. You two lords are the ultimate cause of this entire universe. To bestow sustenance and prosperity upon this realm, you have descended with your plenary expansions. Because you are the well-wishing friends and supersoul of the whole universe, you regard all with unbiased vision. Therefore, although you reciprocate your devotees' loving worship, you always remain equally disposed towards all living beings. Please order me, your servant, to do whatever you wish. To be engaged by you in some service is certainly a great blessing for everyone. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O best of kings, having spoken these words, Sudama could understand what Krishna and Balaram wanted. Thus, with great pleasure, he presented them with garlands of fresh, fragrant flowers. Beautifully adorned with these garlands, Krishna and Balaram were delighted, and so were their companions. The two lords then offered the surrendered Sudama, who was bowing down before them, whatever benedictions he desired. Sudama chose unshakable devotion for Krishna, the supreme soul of all existence, friendship with his devotees, and transcendental compassion for all living beings. So achalam bhaktim, he chose unshakable devotional service. Tasmin eva kilatmani tad bhakteshu chasauradam. So hardam means friendship with his devotees. And the third is bhuteshu cha dayam param, transcendental compassion for all living beings. What are the three things? So he's asked a benediction, Krishna's right there. He says, you can have whatever you want. And what three things did he ask for? Unshakable devotional service. Friendship with Krishna's devotees and transcendental compassion for all living beings. Transcendental compassion. That's bhuteshu cha dayam param. Here param translated as transcendental. That text 52. Iti tasmai varam dattva. Shriyam chanvayam. Vardinim Balam Ayur Yasha Kantim Nirjagama Sahagraja Iti Tasmai Varam Dattva Shriyam Chanvaya Vardinim Balam Ayur Yasha Kantim Nirjagama Sahagraja Iti. Thus, Tasmai to him, Varam, the benediction, Dattva, giving. So the first line said, Krishna gave him the benedictions he asked for. Shriyam, opulence, cha, and anvaya, his family, vardinim, expanding, balam, strength, ayu, long life, yashaha, fame, kantim, beauty, nirjagama, he left, saha, together with Agraja, his elder brother, Lord Balaram. Translation, not only did Krishna grant Sudama these benedictions, but he also awarded him strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity for his family. Then Krishna and his elder brother took their leave. Purport. By the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Key. We can see a clear difference between Lord Krishna's dealings with the nasty washerman and his dealings with the devoted florist, Sudama. The Lord is as hard as a thunderbolt for those who defy him, and as soft as a rose for those who surrender to him. Therefore, we should all sincerely surrender to Lord Krishna, since that is clearly in our self-interest. Iti tasmai varam dattva shriyam chanvaya vardhinim palamayur yasha kantim nirjagama sahagraja. Sudama chose unshakable devotion for Krishna, the supreme soul of all existence, friendship with his devotees, and transcendental compassion for all living beings. Not only did Lord Krishna grant Sudama these benedictions, but he also awarded him strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity for his family. Then Krishna and his elder brother took their leave. And in the purport, we're given the contrast between some of the other characters that Krishna and Balaram met when they came into Mathura. And in the beginning, they met some of the servants of Kamsa who were bringing clothes, the washermen. And when Krishna saw the bundle of clothes that the washerman was carrying, he requested, "Please give us some of these clothes." And the washerman said, "These are for the king. You are so impudent to ask for them that if you ever do this again, you'll be punished, maybe even killed." And then Krishna nonchalantly chopped off his head with his hand. So in these, at Krishna's entrance into Mathura, it's sort of the original rebel without a cause. There is a sense of everyone's attracted to the young person who is could care less about the law, takes matters into his own hands. And when Krishna and Balaram come into Mathura, they're friends who are admiring associates, just watching them take over the town, basically. Krishna walks down the street. He helps himself to whatever he likes. Those who worship him, they get all benedictions. And those who don't, of course, they're benedicted by the touch of Krishna's hand cutting off their head. But we can see that, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, ye yatamam prapadyante tamstatahiva bhajamyaham amavart manuvartante manusha partasaharsha. As someone surrenders to me, I reward them accordingly. In the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the topic comes up. Parikshit Maharaj wants to know, is it really true that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is equal to everyone? Because it seems as if he's helping out the demigods headed by Indra. After all, Indrayari lokam mridiyanti yuge yuge. The Bhagavatam mentions early on that Krishna is the protector of Indra. And in the sixth canto, we find that Vritrasura is defeated and Indra is exalted and so forth. Of course, the Bhagavatam points out that Vritrasura is a great devotee of the Lord. And Indra almost ends up being he's the one who's coming up to speed by the instructions of Vritrasura. So what is the answer to that question? Is he really equal to everyone? And Sugadeva Goswami, giving various examples, assures Parikshit Maharaj that this is the fact, that he is equal to everyone. Why then does it look like there's discrepancies? The answer is that according to one's ability to receive the mercy of the Lord, according to each individual's situation within the three modes of material nature. More succinctly put, when a person is open to receive the mercy of the Lord, has a capacity to receive it, then he can receive as much as he's open for it. And if someone's conditioned to envy the Lord, then that person will not be able to receive much mercy. Of course, as I mentioned already, when people meet Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whether they envy him or whether they're surrendered devotees, they all get some mercy. The first example given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna's pastimes as a child, Putana, is given as an example. Putana is a dastardly, had some dastardly idea about coming to kill Krishna. She was an indentured servant to Kamsa. And Kamsa was sending all of his servants into the Vraj to try to kill Krishna, because Kamsa was not only envious of Krishna, but he was afraid of him. And when Putana came, she disguised herself, though she was an ugly demoness. We see at the end, she's eight miles high. And she came as a beautiful woman and assumed an air that portrayed herself as a mother, one of the loving and caring women of the Vraj. And in the village, so many women would nurture Krishna. And when she came into the household of Nanda and Yashoda, everyone allowed her in. She was very beautiful, and the coward men were especially enamored because of her beauty. Yashoda later, you find, will lament, why did I do this? How did I let her in? But there was some mystic trickery going on. When Putana came in, of course, baby Krishna was lying there with his eyes closed, and he annihilated her just by sucking on her breast. He sucked out the milk, her life air, and she collapsed in a heap 8 miles long. And she was given a benediction, so much so that great devotees like Uddhava and Brahma speak of her as being the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy, even though she came to kill Krishna. Aho bhakiyam stana kala kutam chikamsaya bhayat apyasadvi devegatin tatrichitam tatonyam kalam jayema. Uddhava says in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, oh, how wonderful it is that even though she was a fake maidservant, or she came as a nursemaid, but she had really bad intentions, because she came as a mother, Krishna accepted only that part and didn't consider the part where she tried to kill him. Kambadayalum shananam brajema is the last line that I flubbed earlier. Kambadayalum. Kambadayalum shananam brajema. So he asked the question then, who would surrender to anyone else except for Krishna? These kinds of questions come up throughout the Bhagavatam. Kova bhagavatastasya punya shloke dikarmana. Early on in the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, the sages are asking, who wouldn't surrender to Krishna? Who wouldn't listen to Bhagavatam? And the answer is those who are contaminated by the lower modes of nature, and therefore they're not open to his mercy. Nonetheless, even though she was not a surrendered soul, she received Krishna's special mercy. And she got a liberation which is very much like a mother for Krishna in her eternal service in the spiritual world. Later on, I mentioned Lord Brahma said something about this. You'll find in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, when Brahma is offering his prayers to Krishna, He says, do you, Krishna, have any mercy left for the residents of Vrindavan? Did you give it all to Putana? Because it's such an amazing display of his mercy that he had benedicted her so wonderfully that then he asked that. He said, you must have given it all away. How are you going to give any more after that? But Krishna is unlimitedly merciful. Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindho, Dinabandhu Jagatpate. He's named as the ocean of mercy. Krishna is ever expanding. His mercy is unlimited. He can grant any benediction to any living entity at any time. But it depends on the receptivity of each living entity to receive it. So now, as Krishna walks through the village of Mathura, he encounters various living beings. And now when he meets Sudama, Sudama is spontaneously attracted to Krishna, offers his obeisances, and then gives him his flower garlands that he's been laboring to make. And because of that, Krishna offers him benediction, and Krishna grants whatever benediction he says, and then he gives him even more than that, and then just walks away. And so the devotees are preparing themselves always to be recipients of Krishna's mercy, and they're very much aware that Krishna is capable of awarding any kind of benediction, including taking the devotee back to Godhead. Therefore, the Brahma says also in his prayers, Tate anukampam susumikshamano bunjana eva makritam vipakam. The devotee is able to tolerate whatever happens in this a short span of life that he or she is undergoing, knowing that Krishna's unlimited out of his compassion and mercy, he'll deliver the devotee from the material world. And he or she takes it that whatever kinds of reversals come during this lifetime, the devotee sees that as Krishna's special mercy to purify him or her from the last vestiges of desire to enjoy the material world, to make the devotee more ready to receive Krishna's blessings and mercy. And also, if we examine the kinds of benedictions that Sudama asked for, we can see what is actually common sense when asking for benedictions. There is a way in which, of course, Krishna will award anyone whatever they ask for. But if someone's approaching Krishna and then asks for some material benediction, as Krishna's paraphrased by Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as saying, this person may be a fool, but I'm not a fool. I have offered nectar, but the person's asking to drink poison. That is, when approaching Krishna, if someone asks for some material benediction, this is like drinking poison, because it means that it will simply prolong one's attachment to the material world. So Krishna says that I will give him what he's asking for, but I'll do it in such a way that he won't want it anymore. And instead I'll replace that with my lotus feet. He's so kind. And in fact, the Bhagavatam says, even if you have material desires, because it's not so easy to simply ask for spiritual benedictions, someone may still want something in the material world. So Bhagavatam says, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether you want all kinds of material facilities, or you don't want anything, or you want liberation, you should still approach Krishna. And if you approach Krishna, of course, he's ultimately the one who rewards all desires. In the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, yo yo yam yam tanum bhaktam shradi architum ichati tasya tasya chalam shradham tameva vidadham yaham. When somebody approaches another entity in this world, particularly a demigod, or any powerful person, wanting to get some facility to be happy, Krishna says, actually, I'm the one who's fulfilling that desire through that entity. Not only that, I make the person who's praying or asking for it, I make that person's faith steady so that you can approach that person, because that's their desire. So it is the greatest situation for any person to situate him or herself in such a way as to ask Krishna for purely spiritual benedictions, like the ones Sudama asked for. What are the three? He wanted
unshakable
devotional service. This is a great thing to ask for from Krishna, unshakable devotional service. Because by performing devotional service, naturally all of one's desires will be fulfilled. Nothing else is required. Bhakti stvayi stirataya bhagavan yadi syad daivena na palati divya kishoramurti mukti swayam mukalitamjali sevate sman dharmarta kama gatayo matayo. This verse says that if you worship Krishna with unmotivated bhakti, bhaktis tvayi stirataya bhagavan yadi syad daivena na palati divya kishoramurti mukti swayam mukalitamjali sevate sman, then entities or benedictions like liberation, which many people look for, they'll stand at your door begging to serve you. What to speak of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, all of the various ways in which people want to try to be happy in the material world, those things are at the disposal of the devotee because of the devotee's worshiping Krishna. So nothing is lacking. And in the nectar of devotion, when it is mentioned by Rupa Goswami, as soon as one takes to the path of devotional service, one has an inkling that I want to be on the path of pure devotional service, following in the footsteps of the great acharyas. Then there are immediately six ways in which one is benedicted. The first is that one becomes free from all material distress, because all distress in this world is caused by my attachment to material desires and the sinful reactions that I get by carrying out those desires, and I become more and more implicated. So as soon as I surrender to Krishna, then all of the karma that is in various forms, and Rupa Goswami mentions aprabhrabdha palam bhaptam akutam bijam palon mukham kramen aiva priliyante vishnu bhakti ratatmanam. There are various stages of karma. It's very entangling. There's the kind of karma that hasn't manifested yet. It's in very subtle form. The kind of karma that's starting to sprout. The kind of karma that already sprouted. The kind of karma that sprouted and it grew more fruits to make more seeds. It becomes more and more complex as one gets entangled. And that entanglement comes from one's attachment to that which is not in his or her self-interest. You become free from that just by surrendering to Krishna and taking the path of pure devotional service. Does that sound like a good idea? Say yes.
Yes.
Then Rupa Goswami said, just by this desire to become the servant of the servant, to be in pure devotional service, one begins one's life of auspiciousness. And auspiciousness is described as the ability to help all living entities, to do good for all living entities. There is no other way to do good for all living entities other than practicing a pure devotional service, because everything else falls short of that. And it's not actually a benediction. Then, taking devotional service puts one in transcendental pleasure. And Rupa Goswami says that there are three categories of happiness in this world. First, there's material happiness, which is a joke. Because, as mentioned in many places, naishkarmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam, Ashobate Gyanam Alam Niranjanam Kutakpunash Shashvada Bhadram Ishvare Nacharpitam Karma Yarapya Karanam. Narada Muni says in the fifth chapter of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that even self-realization devoid of devotional service is not very nice. What to speak of, he says, material activities which are cause inauspiciousness from beginning to end, because they obligate you to stay in the material world. So material happiness is no happiness at all. It's a total fake out, so don't fall for that one. And then there's the happiness of identifying oneself with Brahman. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma na shochati na kankshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. This is infinitely the happiness that one experiences by identifying oneself as the spiritual soul and sees him or herself in unity with all living entities. This is far above even the most intense pleasure of the material world, thousands of times greater. And one enjoys the release of not being obligated to the tyranny of the senses and the mind when one comes to the spiritual platform. But then Rupa Goswami says, all that spiritual happiness, it's compared to the happiness of serving Krishna's lotus feet. It's like the water in the hoof print of a calf. That's this spiritual happiness compared to the happiness of devotional service, which is like an ocean, an unlimited ocean. It has no length and breadth. It doesn't stop at any time. It goes on forever increasing. Anandam Buddhivardhanam. Therefore, the devotees who taste even a drop of that ocean are able to overcome the strong waves of material sense desire. What is the verse I'm thinking of? Someone tell me. Could somebody tell me the verse I'm thinking of, please? Shroto ganastana yat pada pankacha palasha vilasya bhaktya karmashrayam gratitam utkatayanti santa. Shroto ganastana. This verse is, which will come into my mind in a minute, by your mercy, says that yat pada pankacha palasha vilasya bhaktya. The devotees who enjoy the happiness of devotional service, their relationship with Krishna, and they're appreciating his personality and their relationship with him. Yat pada pankacha palasha vilasya bhakta karmashrayam gratitam kartayanti santa. They're able to actually cut the knots of attachment to the material world. Shrotoganas tanu shrota. Can someone look it up, please? Shloka book. Yat pada pankacha palasha vilasya bhakta karmashrayam gratitam ukritayanti santa shroto ganas. So then it goes on to say, but those who try to control their senses through mechanical means, like the yogis, they'll be overcome at some point by material sense desire, which will, it will come like one of those sleeper waves. Like in California, people go on their honeymoon out to the coast and they're taking a selfie, and then this huge wave comes and sweeps them away into the ocean. End of story. All the money on the wedding was wasted. Everyone cries, and that's the material world in a nutshell. These waves, they call them sleeper waves. They come in, they wash you away. So the strong waves of desire come into the material senses and drag away the yogis. Did you find it? Yes, please. Third line? Tadvanna rikta matayo gatayo pirudha shroto ganas tanubritam. No. Shroto ganas aranam bhajavasudevam. Yes, so rikta matayo means they're empty-headed. They don't have the image of Krishna in their head. They're just trying to enjoy something impersonal. So that way they get washed away. So pleasure is there in devotional service. And you, if you taste a drop of it from the practice of bhakti, then you'll want nothing else. It's so intense that the devotees reject even the idea of liberation. They don't want to merge. And this is compared to the sharks. The sharks swim in the ocean, but they never merge into the ocean. Sharks don't merge. Somebody sent me a bumper sticker. Sharks don't merge. So the devotees, they don't want to merge. They want to always worship Krishna's lotus feet. And it's rarely achieved, because in order to achieve this pure devotional service, one has to come to the stage of asakti, or attachment to Krishna, which means that you have to come to ruchi. And to do that, you have to go through anartha nivritti and come to nishna. So who wants to do that? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It means you really have to want it in order to come to that stage. That's why he says it's rarely achieved. Because even in other disciplines, Vishwanath Chakrabarty Thakur and Jiva Goswami point out, not that many people excel in many disciplines because they just don't try hard enough. And they're not that into it. They kind of hang around and dabble, so they never quite make it. They can watch others on TV and say, oh, they're pretty good. But they don't do it themselves because they don't really try. So in order to come to the point of achieving this full mercy of Krishna, one really has to want it. And this is actually the price to pay in bhakti, as mentioned by Rupa Goswami. Again, he says, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavito madhi kriyatam yadi kritopi labhyate tatamulyam tatalalyam ekamulyam ekalam janmakoti sukritirna labhyate. It means the price of getting this bhakti is your intense desire to have it. That's it. If you have an intense desire to have it, then it's available to you. You have to get that desire. It's like a greed. Like it's the only thing you think about. And people may offer you all kinds of other things, but you say, I'm not interested really, because I only have this one thing in my mind. And you can't get it any other way unless you have an intense greed for it, intense desire to have it. And he says, does Rupa Goswami, that if you find out it's available, you should run there and get it right away. So don't wait. Just don't wait. So it's rarely achieved. And then finally, it's the only way to attract Krishna. The only way to attract Krishna is one's intense desire to have devotional service and to follow in the footsteps of the great devotees who have it. Tat tat karma pravartanat. So if one does this, then one's life is a never-ending festival of appreciating Krishna and receiving his blessings at every minute. There are no lack of blessings. There's no lack of mercy. There's no lack of direction from Krishna. The only lack is my own capacity. And therefore, if I work upon my capacity by associating with those who have a desire to serve Krishna and by diligently practicing according to the way that the great acharyas have shown the path, then I can, and praying very hard to receive more capacity, then Krishna can pour in his blessings unlimitedly. And now we'll take some reflections or questions. Questions are fine, or reflections. Yes, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Sorry. With the current popular trend of atheism and agnosticism. Can we say that these are symptoms of enviousness towards the Supreme Lord?
Well, thank you, Marsh. Agnosticism just means that I don't know. In fact, the word Gnostic comes from jnan. It's cognate in English with the word know. And if you say agnostic, it means I just don't know. So that's a philosophically defensible position to take. And it's not necessarily that I'm envious if I'm agnostic, because if I just say I have no idea if there's a God or not. However, if I say atheistic, it means I'm against God. Or I say there is no God. I take a hard stance, say there is no God. And that doesn't even make sense. It's not a logical argument. Because if you say there is no God, then you're God. Because in order to say there's no God, you have to know everything to know that there is no God. And that way you're claiming that you are God. So it absolutely makes no sense, and the only explanation for it is that you're envious. Whereas if you're agnostic, at least that's somewhat respectable, because you just say, I don't know. And then you can be helped. Those who are envious, however, need a little thrashing in order to come to their senses, one life after another. Questions or Maharaj, please.
Yes, on the topic of atheism, I'm sure that most of us have interacted with atheists, and although we, like in our communities, and perhaps our philosophy backs up shunning these types of people, you'll find that oftentimes, at least for a good number of atheists, they're kind, they're courteous, they're fair, they don't judge quickly, they sometimes put devotees to shame in terms of their demonstrating any of the suffering qualities. That's
What I'd like to say about that is devotees should be very nice so that the atheists don't seem to shine. So even if you're a devotee, don't take the verse yas yasti bhaktir bhagavatiya kinchana sarvar gunas tatra samasite sura harava bhaktasya kuto mahaguna manorati nasatatavatobhi, this verse from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, and say, well, only devotees have good qualities. It's not true, actually. The verse doesn't actually say that. It just says that a person who's not in devotional service may have good qualities, but because they're based on mental speculation, they can easily be dragged back down into lower modes of nature, and they will be eventually. So they're not steady. So devotees shouldn't take it then that because I'm a devotee, therefore I naturally have all good qualities and everyone else can go to hell. And it doesn't matter how I act. It's actually one of the best ways to teach Krishna consciousness is to be nice to people. Krishna says it in the Bhagavad Gita, said, those who are a kind friend to all living beings are very dear to me. And we're not supposed to agitate people. This is something Prabhupada mentions in the pastime of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu meeting Prakashananda Saraswati, because Mahaprabhu came in a very humble way. He didn't assert himself, except to show up there and show his effulgence, which was pretty attractive to the Mayavadis, but he sat in the most lowly place in the assembly of these Mayavadis. And Prakashananda Saraswati came over and personally extended his hand to lead Mahaprabhu to a better seat. And at that time, Prabhupada says, Prakashananda got agyata sukriti. And then Prabhupada says that people are already inimical, so don't make them more inimical. Don't take a condescending position. and think that because I'm a devotee, I'm better than everybody else. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Trinadapi Sinichena Toror Api Sahishnuna Amanina Mananina Kirtaniya Sadhari. Should have an attitude as a devotee that I should give respect to everyone. Everyone's respectable in one way or another. But I don't deserve any respect myself. And also, you know, one should be tolerant. If people are nasty to you, don't snap back. Be tolerant. And actually, even atheistic people, they're expecting devotees to have these qualities, atheistic or any other people. Just yesterday when we were riding on the plane, you know, the person next to me and several other people, they're noticing, like if you're dressed in different clothing and they ascertain that you're, you know, you have some discipline. The guy next to me says, so what is your discipline? And I said, Krishna. And he goes, oh, Krishna. So they're watching the rest of the flight. It's like, how's this person going to act? You know, do they help people? Do they get out of the way? Do they snap at the flight attendant? They'll notice that. Because they have a certain expectation of what a spiritual person is supposed to be. If you don't live up to it, they immediately get disappointed. Of course, that doesn't mean that, you know, that's what we do, is we just try to be nice to everybody all the time. We don't teach Krishna consciousness or speak directly sometimes. But both things are in order. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu moved about in such a way as to attract people. And he knew that their hearts had to be open in order to take in Krishna consciousness very deeply. So we should be nicer than these atheists or humanitarians. People should see that. And if you put the two together, you get a winning combination. Devotees who actually have a tradition to follow, and they're following it strictly, first of all, that blows people's minds. Because, like, you really follow this? Because barely anybody follows anything. They just follow their senses. And if they see somebody actually disciplined, it really impresses them, whether they say it or not. And if you add that to being super cordial and gentle as you move about the world, add those two things together, people want to follow you and take to the process of Krishna consciousness just by watching your example. So be nicer than the best behaved atheist in the world. That's one thing. It's important to do. Is that good? I got two thumbs up from Maharaj. Now that's pretty good. My day's starting off on a good note. More questions? A question from online?
A comment. Hare Krishna Maharaj, I like what you said, we are receptacles of the mercy of Krishna. Makes me realize this process is giving us the opportunity to take out the dust of our hearts. Thank you.
Oh yeah, nice point, Premarani. There's a way in which our main job is to clean our hearts, as is mentioned in the pastime of the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. This is a metaphor. I mean, they actually did clean the temple. And Mahaprabhu cleaned it three times inside and then also outside because he didn't want anything getting back in. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as quoted by Srila Prabhupada in his purports to this section, says that this is a metaphor for the way in which we should always be cleansing our hearts to make sure there's no dust, no kinds of dirty things left in the heart. And when we're able to do that successfully, he says, then we can install Krishna on the throne of our heart. There's an altar. A heart is an altar. And if you're going to install Krishna, you have to make it clean. So he says, when you've cleansed your heart sufficiently, you can actually install the deity of Krishna on your heart. And on that day, you can hold a festival. Invite all your friends. You can have a big feast, a big kirtan. Yay! I installed Krishna on the throne of my heart. And then there's nothing lacking ever again. One should be careful also because in the metaphor of the gardener, Mahaprabhu says you should water the seed. It'll grow into a creeper. The creeper will grow to the spiritual world. Even after the creeper goes to the spiritual world, he says you have to keep watering. It's not that you attain that and then you stop watering. Two things. Keep watering, and he said be aware of offenses. Because if you commit offenses, even after the creeper has grown to the spiritual world, it can still be trampled by the offense to devotees. And then, you know, your creeper gets smashed. So don't smash your creeper. That's a bumper sticker, too. Okay. What other things? Yes. Prabhu?
There's a question.
Yeah. One, two. Go ahead. You got the mic. Tie goes to the runner. Infield fly roll.
Hi, I had this question. How to practice intense bhakti without intense association? How are you going to do it on your own? It's just not possible. That's what my perception is.
Yeah, well, so a sangha is the most important aspect of devotional service. You have to have good association. And Mahaprabhu points this out when he teaches the process of devotional service to Sanatana Goswami. He says devotional service starts because of one's association with Vaishnavas. It continues by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, and one comes to the perfection of devotional service by the mercy of Vaishnavas. So at no time should one detach oneself from the association of devotees. And we can take all kinds of testimonials from devotees who have tried and have, for instance, distanced themselves from the sangha of devotees. And then you can ask them, if they're honest, how did you do? And they'll say, not very well. Because as soon as you get away from the fire of the devotees, then you start to cool down. And the material world says, why don't you just come over here just for a second? And next thing you know, it's like 2 billion lifetimes later. It's like, what are you still sitting over there for? It's like, oh, whoops. So you have to stay in the association of devotees. Don't leave the association of devotees for any reason. I hope that helped. Thanks. Prabhu?
Prabhu, you say when that's not available. So maybe you can get...
I know he said that, but I was just saying that, you know... When's it's not available? So Nirukula would like me to embellish the answer by saying that even if you live in a remote place, then you should be inventive and find ways to stay in the association of devotees. For instance, I know people that have a full life of devotional service in remote association through, watching the internet. They wake up in the morning and they have their Mangal Arati along with everybody else, for instance, in Mayapur. And then they go through the morning program, they listen to the class, the rest of the day they're tuned in. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Tivrena means the very concentrated, intense devotional service. So somebody gave me this little box from India. It's supposed to be high tech, but you know, compared to like a smartphone or something, it's a joke. But it's really nice because it's got this chip in it and it has all the Prabhupada's lectures. And you can turn it on and try to find the right volume because it doesn't calibrate very well, but it's part of the charm of the whole thing. Then you could all day long just listen to lectures of Prabhupada. And so staying in the vibration is also sangha. So one way or another you have to stay in the association of devotees. One technique that is very helpful if you live in a remote place, and actually I just talked to such a nice devotee the other day who lives in a very remote place, and she said, there's no devotees that live by me. I do watch on the internet, but I need a little more than that. And I told her, you should start a program at your house. She said, but what do I know? I'm not initiated. I don't know anything. I said, well, you know enough to chant your rounds and listen to the devotees on the internet. You're here at Rathiatra. You drove all the way here. Said, you know more than a lot of people do. And if you just read together with people and have a discussion. And if you have questions, ask somebody else and you can answer them later and chant Hare Krishna. When you invite people to your house, you create your own sangha. And this can be done. And actually, if you invite people into the space that you live in, you'll notice that you clean up your space. If you live alone, you might start living like a pig. But if you bring people into your environment, then you'll start thinking about that. And maybe I shouldn't live like a pig. Maybe I should live like a devotee. Because when devotees come over, or people are looking at me as if I'm supposed to be a devotee, they should see something nice. It's a really good way to trick yourself into being a high-class devotee, is to bring other people into your environment and say, here's how I live. It was like, and even if once a week you have to pull yourself together and clean your whole house again and get yourself looking like a devotee suddenly, that will give you great momentum over time. We had a program in our house for 16 years. We lived a kind of in a remote place. We moved to San Francisco, actually, and there weren't really temples nearby that we were going to. That sounded weird. The temples weren't really available to us at that time. So we started our own program. That also sounded weird. Anyway, we went to San Francisco and we started our own program. We did live slightly remotely. But that helped, having a program, people coming to our home regularly. And I always noticed it, you know, when people would come and then, you know, then every once in a while, really advanced devotees would come. And then it was like they do kirtana. Sometimes, one time I thought the roof was going to blow off. I thought the roof would actually come off because the kirtan was so ecstatic. And we were never the same after that. Some sadhus brought their deities in, and like, here they are. My friend Satyadev Prabhu lived over in Half Moon Bay, and one of our godbrothers who needed a visa, I think he's an Indian citizen now, he's lived in India forever. He's an American, Loka Sarangi Maharaj. Now his sannyas name is Parvat Maharaj. He lives at Radhakund and just chants all day long. But in any case, when he came and he stayed at Satyadev's house, his kids were still living in the house, and so Loki moved in. That was our nickname for him. He moved in and he put his Govardhan Shila on top of the television. So no more TV for anybody. Because how are you going to turn the TV on when Krishna's sitting on top of it? And then they'd come home. It was a small house, and they'd see him in the guest room. You know, he'd be sitting on his bed chanting in the morning, in the afternoon, at night. When they went to bed, he was chanting. When they got up, he was chanting. Then he'd walk up and down the street. He looked like a Hasidic Jew because he had this long beard. He wore his, sannyasi thing over his head, and his neighbors are looking like that, you know, and everything's kind of like, okay, there's a sadhu here, everything changes. And the kids actually became attracted. It's like, wow, this devotional service is something special. So bring devotees into your house whenever you can. Have a program in your house, even if you don't think you know what you're doing, because you'll learn really fast if you're forced to have a program. And that's a good way to do it too. Is that better? Okay. Thank you. It's good. Whenever you do a yoga, you got to have a referee to make sure it's going.
Yes, but I think there are two comments just in line with your what you said about our guru Brahman near Delhi. And we started giving this japa session. Everybody gives japa session in his home, come at 5 o'clock. And going at lunchtime around 1 o'clock. Keep on doing the chanting, 64, 128 chanting like that. That's the one we started. And then they started another thing on Ekadashi. Everybody, what you will have to come to Mangalarti, before Mangalarti, 2:45. And keep on chanting until they finish 124.
Yeah, I heard about that. Someone was just telling me the other day. I think Lokanath Maharaj or somebody was telling me. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And one of the second comments, just is slightly out. Tulsidas in Ramayana said, in Ramchaitramana said, like a greedy person keeps the money in his mind all the time, doesn't let it go. Like anyone should hold the Krishna in his mind, he should not let it go. They compare the greedy person with the Islam.
Yeah, like a miser counts his coins, recounts his coins. He's always like, says you should count your mantras, see how many you've got. And he's like, how many do I have now? Yeah, thank you. Nice comments.
Do I have a question about
yeah?
Just the point you made about following the path of those who have that attachment to Krishna.
Yes.
So my question is, how do you recognize whether or not that person has that attachment? Because my understanding is, one really has it, they may want to hide it or not make it.
They may try to hide it, but it's what it is. It's called self-effulgence. So when you find devotees who are actually advanced, the effulgence is not hideable. They'll be very humble, because advanced devotees are humble, but they shine. They're self-effulgent. So you'll be naturally attracted, and you'll see that this person is actually following something, and you're getting a feeling from them, watching them, hearing them, that you don't get elsewhere. This is mentioned by Prithu Maharaj, fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, when he says that the pure devotees have a special quality about them. And then he says they're speaking, poetically, he says, touches the lotus feet of Krishna. And Krishna has saffron mercy. He has saffron. His lotus feet are decorated with saffron. And so his speaking touches Krishna's lotus feet, and then the sound vibration gets mixed with this, what he calls saffron mercy particles. So then when it goes in your ear, it has a different effect. Which makes actually a lot of sense, because there's a subtlety in nature. Subtle things can actually have a inordinate not inordinate, but it can have a greater than expected result from the subtlety. So when there's some purity there. So you can recognize those who hide their good qualities. This is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, in the famous verse from 10th canto, evam vrata swapriya namakirtya jatana rago jita chuta ucher hasatyato rautiti rauti gayati unmadavam rititi loka bhayaha. This is a verse that Srila Ishvarapuri taught to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just after Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas, initiation, and from him. And then he started chanting Hare Krishna. And then he came back to his guru and said, did you give me the right mantra? Because this has driven me crazy. Every time I chant, I cry, I fall on the ground, I dance like a madman. And his guru said, very good, you got the right mantra and you're chanting it in the proper way. And then he quoted this verse, which says, when you chant Hare Krishna, evam vrata, you take a vow to chant, priyanamakirta, the name will become very dear to you. And then, by the association with the holy name, your heart will melt, druta chitta. And then rotiti rauti gayati, roti sound is like rowdy, you know, somebody's rowdy. Roti, rowdy is same in Sanskrit. And it means the person becomes like unhinged, and they don't care for outsiders anymore, lokabhayaha. They don't care about the outside world, they're like, ah! But in the purport it's mentioned that some devotees hide their pure bhakti. They don't expose it. Prabhupada didn't show all kinds of symptoms. He held it back. Every once in a while, devotees would catch him. You know, they'd see through the door or in just a couple times. Like in Atlanta, Prabhupada started chanting Parama Karuna, and he started, you know, tears were flowing from his eyes when he saw Gornitai. And in Mayapur, 1975, Prabhupada was on the Vyasasana, and he started chanting Jayarada Madhava, and then it was like he just stopped in the middle. He was stunned. He couldn't move. until Hansaduta said, Hare Krishna, and everyone started chanting, then Prabhupada came out of his trance. Everyone was like, what happened? You know, what was that? So there were ways in which Prabhupada, but most of the time, Prabhupada didn't come out with that kind of stuff. You know, Srinandana Maharaj mentions in a car once, going to the morning walk, I think in Cheviot Hills Park, he mentioned to Prabhupada, oh, I just read this Leela about Krishna and the Krishna book, and he started, and Prabhupada was very stoic. He didn't, that's beautiful Leela, let's talk about it. He sort of didn't respond in a really effusive way about that. So he was very kind of conservative and reserved and didn't show symptoms. So in the purport to the verse, the acharyas say that there are some that show their symptoms and others that they don't show them, but there's always two symptoms by which you can tell that somebody's advanced. This comes from Madhvacharya's commentary. So he says, first thing is that they're steady. This is a sure sign someone's very advanced. And you can't fake that. You're either there or you're not. You either show up for your service or you don't. And if you're always there and it happens, and also it's not just for 5 years or 10 years, or it's like for your whole life, the person showing up. You know, the longer it goes, the more of a portfolio you have and more of a resume, that's a steadiness. That's a sign of devotional, pure devotional service, awakening in the heart. And the other, he said, is mukya prasada, which means that the words such a person speaks are naturally merciful. The person's nindadi shunya, pridamipsita sangalabhya, the person is freed from the propensity to criticize others. Ninda means to, like, you know, as soon as you talk, first thing that comes out is like, let me cut somebody else down to size. Let me find the fault. And that's no longer there. Nindadi shunya, it's purified. And that's evident from the way the person speaks. You can tell. So those two symptoms, they say, that way you can find out who's actually pure in heart by these two symptoms if they're hiding the other ones. So anyway, I'll just read the verse for one last time, because these two verses are about an intimate exchange between Krishna and one of his pure devotees, and it gives us an indication of what is to be gained by this pure devotional service and how great it is. Sudama chose unshakable devotion for Krishna, the supreme soul of all existence, friendship with his devotees, and transcendental compassion for all living beings. So if you're ever asked what benediction you want, you can emulate Sudama and ask for these three. Not only did Lord Krishna grant Sudama these benedictions, but he also awarded him strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity for his family. Then Krishna and his elder brother took their leave. Om Tat Sat. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gaur Premananda Nitai Gaura Haribo, Haribo Nitai Gaura Haribo, Nitai Gaura Haribo, Bo Nitai Gaura Haribo. Vancha Gopadrvishcha Kripasanabhavacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namah Nantakoti Vaishnavindiki Jaya.
Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Hey! Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.